Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
Well, good evening to you and welcome to the Monday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. It is the 18th of November, 2024 and halfway through, I suppose, the month of November and getting ready for the month of December 2024 is how we're going to end it. And today, our conversation perhaps is very timely because I think a lot of us are already preparing for the end of the year. Like I said, it's already mid-month of November. Those that are getting paid on the 20th are already starting to think about their payment. Those that got paid on the 15th, maybe pelile, money is gone, and all that. The 25th people also are counting down the days, right? But today we're talking about money moves that you can make before the end of the year. That's what I'm saying. It is a timely conversation. Why? Now, as we approach the end of the year, it's an ideal time to start planning for a financially successful 2025. So you don't wake up in 2025 and start planning for 2025. That's our argument. You prepare now for 2025. And as they say, there's no time like the present, and that taking the right steps now can set you up for financial growth in 2025. So therefore, Tish Makonisi joins us to share with us some strategies that you can consider for managing personal finance and investments in the year ahead, that is the year 2025. And he's joining us on the line. Good evening, sir, and welcome once again to the show.
Good evening, Chapelo, and good evening to your listeners. Always a pleasure to meet up with you guys.
Thank you so much. The pleasure is always ours. And how's things so far?
I think it's been a decent year on the personal front, work, and also just trying to manage money, I guess. but things are okay. Things are good. There's much to be grateful for.
Indeed, indeed, lovely. I think the task of managing money is always the most difficult one, isn't it?
Excellent. It's not an easy one, but I'm always reluctant sometimes to agree when people say it's difficult, because then people get reluctant to do it, right? People just feel like it's something they shouldn't tangle with because it's difficult.
Yeah.
I think, let's say, it's possibly challenging, but not insurmountable.
Okay. That makes sense, right? And I suppose the balance of the year then is an opportunity for us to make it possible, as opposed to looking at the entire year and thinking to ourselves, what a difficult year one has had. It's easy to go into that rabbit hole.
It is indeed, but I don't know who this is accredited to, whether it's the Chinese or somebody who said that, you know, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago and the next best time is now.
Okay.
So, you know, you can't lament what you could have done, but as long as you're still breathing, you still have life, you can still get around to doing it. So the year might not have been great. But if you think that it needs turning around, then there's no time like the present to start.
Yes, fantastic. And you are here to share with us some of those moves, perhaps, that one can make. I mean, I want to say that we are quite a growing show, and our listenership has been growing, particularly on personal finance. So I understand there might be people who might not know you. If you can share a little bit about yourself, who you are and what you do, maybe.
Sure. That's always the really difficult question.
I know, right?
I'm just a guy that has had the privilege to work in financial services for the last few years.
Yes.
And one of the things that I'm passionate about is just about people managing their money better.
Yeah.
I know that it's always nice to make loads and loads of money.
Yeah.
But my experience has shown me that it's not how much you make, it's what you do with what you make that makes the difference. So I'm pretty passionate, you know, about just trying to share the little that I know.
Yeah.
And hopefully also in sharing, I also get an opportunity to be able to learn from people that I share with.
Yes. Fantastic. Lovely, lovely. Okay. I want to really segment our conversation into three parts, right? So the first part is I want us to look at resolutions, particularly financial resolutions, because someone somewhere is already drafting, I suppose, their 2025 New Year resolution. And I want to confess that I'm one of those people already that are already looking forward to 2025. So there's someone who's already drafting resolution. Maybe let's start with touching on resolutions, particularly financial resolutions, and maybe why they're important. And then we look at, I suppose, some important money moves that one can make this year before the year ends. And then let's put together a plan, an implementable plan. So those three frameworks is how I want us to approach this particular conversation. But maybe let's start there with resolutions. Are they even worth it, these financial resolutions? Because it seems like we just write them, but it's always difficult to follow through.
I think resolutions matter because I think the first step is always the decision that you make. You know, if you aim at nothing and you hit nothing, you really can't blame anybody for hitting nothing. And I think in as much as some of our resolutions are lofty, I think they give us something to strive towards, something to work towards.
Yeah.
You obviously need to be able to see them through
in
order to get the result. But we've got to start somewhere. So I think resolutions are absolutely necessary. I think sometimes calling it resolutions, you know, makes it seem like something that's, you know, beyond some of us, and you know, it sounds really lofty.
Yes.
But what resolutions are actually just plans, right? To say this is a plan, this is something I'm committing to trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And you know, following on from that is that these are the steps that I think will be able to take me there. Whether or not the steps are correct is another discussion. At the very least, you want a plan and you want an idea of how you are going to bring that plan to fruition. So resolutions are necessary because resolutions are in effect just plans. And you know, when you make a plan, you kind of look at your current situation and then you think about where you want to go or what you want to be achieve or how you want things to turn out, and then you start on that path. So in as far as that, you know, understanding of resolutions is concerned, absolutely. You know, let's have some resolutions. Let's make a plan. Let's have resolve to say, you know, this is what we want to do.
Yeah. Are we not over commercializing the concept of resolutions, for example? Because if you the way you're putting it, it's something as simple as just putting a plan, right? And maybe when you bring it to that simplicity, it becomes easy to follow through and maybe do and all that. But the moment you say resolutions, it almost sounds like it's this big audacious thing that one has to achieve, or these big audacious things. But it could be something as simple as just you know, finishing the first quarter alive. That's a resolution on its own and all that. But are we not over commercializing this thing?
I think we are, because you know, we pick, you know, because of the way we review resolutions, right? This is the beginning of a new year, new me. I'm going to be a completely different person, which is not impossible to do, but I also then think that makes an aura around this thing that makes it super difficult to attain, right? When you look at the word resolution, which comes from the word resolve, you know, and when you think what is to resolve to do something, it's to be determined, to set in your mind that you want to achieve this. And if you are, you know, walking home, for instance, and it's raining and everybody else has decided they're going to take, you know, shelter and wait for the rain to stop, and the rain is not stopping, and you decide, hey, I'm going to walk through the rain. It's a resolution, right?
Yeah.
You've resolved. You've set out to do something, and you're doing it. So resolutions are all around us. We make these resolutions every day. We make plans every day.
Yeah.
And we set, you know, actions in motion to achieve those plans.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because of the way we compartmentalize our lives into years and weeks and days and so forth, we get to the beginning of a year and we think to ourselves, hey, what do I want to achieve this year?
Mm-hmm.
And what am I going to do to achieve it?
Mm.
And then we say, oh, I've, you know, this is my New Year's resolution. It's just your New Year's plan.
Yes,
it's okay.
It's 10 years.
You know, but like you say, we then over-commercialize them. We then make them, you know, almost impossible to achieve because of the way that we set them out. So I think simple is always better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, journey of 1,000 steps begins with one, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So even as we make our resolutions and we make our plans,
Yeah.
let's understand how these plans are are achievable and how they are reasonable and how they actually contribute to the outcomes that we desire to see.
Yeah. Okay. Last one on these resolutions. Just I'm thinking about it now financially, right? Because again, one might say, I want a new job because I want to earn a little bit better, or I want to earn this X amount of salary this year, and maybe one tracks that and all that. But if it doesn't happen, it can be very, very frustrating. Sometimes it could be that maybe my envisaged salary or envisaged amount that I want to make this year through my business or whatever, or where I want to be financially, might be a little bit unreasonable or at least untenable, because maybe where I am versus where I need to be is actually 5 steps ahead, and maybe I don't have the resources, the tools, the strategies to get there. Financially, what's the most prudent way? Do I look at where I was, where I am, and then can foresee, can project maybe if I was, you know, worth 1 million last year because of my assets, maybe 1.2 is more modest than saying 10 million at the end of the year?
So I'd answer that in a roundabout way. I would say that it's always good to start with the why.
Okay.
Because the why determines your commitment. The things that you wish to do for reasons that don't make sense to you are very easy to stop doing and to not be committed to, because why? You know? So if I'm worth 1 million and I think to myself, I need to be worth 1.2 million, the question is why? You know, why would I want to be worth 1.2 million? Is it simply a case of just, I want to be able to say, you know, last year I ended it like this, and then this year I ended it like this. Mm. And if growth is something that really matters to me, and it's important to me to be able to realize that I'm getting better, I'm moving forward, I'm not stagnant, then that may be a good enough why. Mm. But if why is simply because, well, my friend also made 1 million last year, and I really don't want to be worth as much as my friend, you know, if that's what drives you, then by all means. But I also don't think that's a really good reason, right?
Yes,
because you don't know what your friend is busy with.
Yes.
You know, you wake up now, you're worth 1.2, and then the guy tells you like he's worth 3 because he's gone and done something super amazing. Then it just doesn't kind of feel like your why was worth it, because you're chasing something that's intangible. So the why is really, really important, even pertaining to your finances. So why do you want to fix your finances? You know, is it because each time your kids want you to take them out for ice cream, you've got to come up with a great excuse because you can't afford it.
Yes.
And, you know, that disappointed look in their eyes is just not something that you want to stomach, you know, for the rest of your life, you know. That's a really great why. That's a tangible one. If family is what matters to you. But you've got to start from the why. You've got to identify why it matters before you can commit to it. Because if you can't identify why it matters, then, you know, it's going to be difficult to maintain the commitment.
Yeah, especially if your why is in relation to another person. You don't know what their why is for what they want to achieve. And so you could be constantly chasing after the wind. And when they make moves like that, you think, well, maybe I'm not worth it. When you have moved, in fact, yourself, maybe got a better job and all that, as you are saying there. So really love it. Okay. Some people might say, yo, it's November. It's almost the end of the year. Are there any money moves that one can make before the end of the year 2024? Let's get into that one now. Is it even realistic?
Well, if we go back to where we started around, you know, the best time to plant a tree being 20 years ago and the next best time being now, you know, I don't think it's ever too late to take control of a situation that you feel could run a little differently. So I would look at it in that context of it's never too late to do the right thing. And if your finances, you know, happens to be one of the things that you are stressing about, there's no time like the present. I don't think you want to say to yourself, okay, let me go and splurge one more time in December. And then I can start, you know, being sensible about my money in January. Because, well, you're just building a bigger hole. And if you need to get out of it, you know, then that's a lot more climbing out that you need to do. So I don't think you climb out of a hole by making it deeper. I think you climb out of a hole by stopping digging. You know, that's the first step. So absolutely not. It's not too late to realize when you need to do the right thing. So I think one of the first things that you could do is to actually just sit down and get a full-on understanding of what you're making and what you're spending,
Okay.
and understanding whether all the things that you're spending on, are the things that you should be spending on given the state of your finances. And it's a really difficult thing to do. A lot of people don't like to do it, to be able to actually sit down and say, so today's the 25th, my money's come in, I need to pay my rent, I need to pay for my electricity, I need to buy some food, I need to pay my helper, I need to put fuel in my car, I need to pay for my insurance. Then so how much is left, right? And on the basis of that, then should I really be eating out 4 times a week,
Sure.
or do I need a full-time helper, or do I need somebody to come in 2 or 3 times a week? Should I really be paying so much for my car? Is that a realistic amount to be paying for my car given how much I make? So that's always a great first step. How much is coming in, and what are you spending it on? And from there on, you can follow on. Do you have enough left for the eventualities that are potentially ahead of you? Does this allow you to save for a rainy day? Could you perhaps spend less on certain things, and give yourself some breathing room? You've got to start there.
Okay, that makes sense. And what about debt reduction then? Is that should that be a move on its own that I need to put a strategy for to make sure that at least in the year 2025, I reduce one or two debt? Because I've spoken, I'm sure you have as well, with people who once they've squashed one debt or another, no matter how small that is, the freedom that you get from just finishing that particular debt. But it required an entire strategy, an entire commitment from yourself so that you can at least come to some or other better financial position in this year, next year, whatever the case might be. Does debt need its own move?
It definitely does, Sapelo, without a doubt. But in order for you to squash debt, you need to be able to create the surplus. And in a lot of instances, that surplus does not come from making more money. Sometimes you can be fortunate to, find
Get
yourself
a
with a
windfall.
windfall, or to find yourself in a job where you're earning, a little more money. So now you decide to forego the immediate benefit of earning extra money by saying, I'm going to direct it towards my debt. So it's a whole different topic in terms of the number of different strategies that you could apply to do that. There's also good debt and there's also bad debt. You also need to be able to define that. Sometimes a lot of the debt that we carry is consumptive debt. So you don't even remember what you spent the money on, but you're still paying it off. That's usually the case with credit card debt for a lot of people. You get that credit card, it's got a beautiful limit. You fly off to the Seychelles and you live like a king for a couple of weeks or for a few days, and then you come back and now you need to pay off that credit card. And 8, 10 months later, you don't even remember what Mauritius looks like or Seychelles looks like, but you're still paying off the debt. So it's a completely different topic with a lot of little, call it segues that you'd need to get into. But a plan that says when you're making a financial plan and you've got some debt sitting on you want to be able to understand which of that debt is good debt, how much is that debt costing you? Because some debt is more important to squash than others because it costs you a heck of a lot more money. Even though sometimes, the cheaper debt that you get, for instance, like a mortgage loan, you get it at a lower interest rate, but you pay it off over a longer period of time.
Longer
So
period, yeah.
cumulatively, the amount of interest that you pay
Yeah.
is a lot more than the interest that you would pay on a credit card, perhaps that
Yeah.
you take out and you pay off over a couple of years.
Yeah.
So you need to consider all those things. But the very first thing is you've got to start from saying how much is coming in and how much is going out and where is it going, and you'll start to see some of those things like, okay, so this is how much I'm paying for my debt, right? But I'm also kind of eating out 4 times a week, so do I perhaps eat out twice a week and those other two meals apply them to my debt? Those are all things that you can do. But it's got to be a realistic plan. It's got to include all facets or all angles of, where your money is coming in and where your money is going.
I mean, I don't want to belabor the point, and I know it's a topic on its own, but good debt, bad debt, if you can just touch on it high level for our listeners maybe who may not necessarily understand the difference between the two. I don't want to leave anyone behind.
Okay, so, previously when we spoke about it, I shared my it's a personal theory around the bank does not necessarily have vaults of cash. What the bank has is loads of time on their hands. So the bank is never going to lend you money that you can't pay back to them.
I remember that.
In fact, when they lend you money, they do an assessment to see if you can actually pay back the money. So all it means is that the bank is actually saying, hold on, not only can you afford this money that you want to take from us, you can even afford to pay us for giving it to you. So if we give you a million, you are good for 1.2 million. So on that basis, we're going to advance this money to you. Your only problem, though, is you don't want to wait 5 years until you have a million. And there may be valid reasons for that, you may need to buy a house and you've got a family. So you can't be sleeping outside for 5 years while you accumulate the money to buy the house. So there are good reasons why you would get into debt. And I would consider something like that to be better debt than saying I'm getting a credit card so I can take my family on a holiday. That's probably a really great way to build memories and to spend time with your family. But, coming back in a year later, you're still trying to pay this thing off and you've got competing demands and you find yourself in a situation where you now need to forego some of your necessities in order for you to be able to pay that back. Perhaps you would have wanted to wait a year or look at a cheaper option for a holiday as opposed to incurring that debt. Generally, debt that you incur for consumptive purposes to buy things that don't necessarily appreciate in value or things that are fleeting is not always the best debt. I look at people sometimes, you take out a store card account and you're buying clothes. And maybe you do need to show up at work. You need to appear a certain way for your work, and you perhaps don't have the liquidity to do it yet. But that's kind of debt that you need to extinguish really, really quickly. You can't be paying off a shirt, over 7 or 8 months after it's already shrunk in the washing machine. That doesn't sound like the kind of debt that you should be incurring.
Definitely.
So, like I say, it's a topic all on its own, but I hope that's enough of a segue to just give us an idea of, if we really need to get into debt, what sort of debt should we be carrying? And if we are finding ourselves in debt that we probably shouldn't have gotten into, then, we need to apply the sort of, prioritization around expunging that debt so that we are free of it.
Definitely. And I'm arguing this and bringing this to the fore because one of the other things that I hear quite a lot of people make resolutions when it comes to their finances about is the issue of investment. So people say, I want to invest this year, I want to invest better and all that, and only to get banned because there's no investment strategy. So talk to us a little bit about that move in 2025 of investing. It's a noble one. It's a good one. But I think it's very easy to fall into a trap if there's no strategy.
So there are a couple of reasons why people think about investing money. I mean, the first one is obviously to be able to get a return. So here I am, I've got 100,000 rand, I've got 50,000 rand, and I'm thinking to myself, well, if I just leave it there as 50,000 rand and I have 50,000 rand a couple of years later, I really haven't done myself a favor. So maybe I find something to invest in so that there's a likelihood that my 50,000 rand may be 60,000 rand after a few years. So I think return is an important part of why people invest, but you also invest to preserve capital, so that you don't lose the money that you've earned, so that it's not just sitting there doing absolutely nothing, which may be to a degree the same thing as investing for a return, but you also want to be able to track your progress, and investments allow you to do that. But when you invest, you've got to understand why you are investing and what time horizon you're investing for. So if I'm investing just to be able to get a return, I am probably going to invest in something that's a lot more sure and a lot more long term.
Yes.
If I'm investing, you know, because I possibly want, you know, to fund something, I then need to look at what kind of horizon I'm looking at to fund it over. So if I'm investing money to send my child to university and my child has been born this year, I kind of have a 20-year horizon on when I need to use, you know, the investment and the returns.
Yeah.
So typically I may find myself investing in something with a lot more, you know, it might be a little more risky because,
yeah,
you know, I've got a horizon,
yeah,
over which I think that, you know, the cycles or, you know, the ebbs and flows of investment returns,
yeah,
will leave me in a net positive position.
Yeah.
And then there may be money that I'm investing because I need to use it in the future. I need,
yes,
to use it in a year or two.
Yes.
So I can't afford risk in it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if I'm sitting here and thinking, you know, I'm living in a different country and
hey,
I'm going to move back home in,
yeah,
another year,
yeah,
and I'm going to need some money to set myself at home,
yeah,
I'm not going to choose an investment instrument that's going to pay me back over 20 years because I need the money in a year.
Definitely.
So, you know, I'm probably going to invest in something that's probably a little less glamorous, probably not such a high rate of return, but with probably a lot more certainty around the preservation of my capital than something where my capital is more at risk. The other thing with investments is invest in what you know, invest in what you understand. There are a lot of really complicated things out,
yeah,
there. There are,
yeah,
a lot of really clever people that build a lot of clever structures,
yeah,
that will show you amazing numbers on a spreadsheet,
hey,
and show you, you know, glamorous and glossy brochures about returns.
Yeah.
But if you don't understand it, don't invest in it. It doesn't matter how many people are investing in it. The first thing is you've got to understand it. At the very least, take some time to do some investigations. There are a lot of things happening in SA, for instance, at the moment around unlicensed investments, and you've got financial, you know, regulators or oversight bodies that accredit people and organizations that purport to be running investments for the public. So, you know, do your homework on these investments. Be absolutely certain that you understand what you're investing in.
Yeah.
Be certain why you want to invest,
yeah,
you know, what sort of returns do you,
yeah,
expect, and over what time period,
yeah,
before you get in. And if you're not sure, I think trust your instincts. I think that's something that we ignore. There is in us an innate desire to stay alive.
Yes.
Which explains goosebumps sometimes when,
yeah,
we find ourselves in situations we shouldn't be in.
Yeah.
And if you're uncertain, rather err on the side of caution, and keep your money with you rather than to be found crying, saying, I knew it. I knew it. I had a bad feeling. Now the money's gone, you know, so you,
yeah,
knew it and bad feeling are
it doesn't
of no
help
consequence.
At this stage,
you know?
Right? Yeah. And to even think about the fact that it's silly season right now, right?
Yeah.
As they,
yeah,
call it, because then there's cleverer people who come up with cleverer,
yes,
things and will,
yes,
promise you returns for 2025 that are just unbelievable. I suppose the message,
yeah,
then is your why. Know your why, because that's really, really important. The
yeah,
timelines and stuff like, don't just put money anywhere where you,
yeah,
maybe sometimes your gut feel and all. But there's things to be careful about from an investment point,
yeah,
of view, because people come up with clever things now.
Precisely. I think one of the things that is really uncomfortable for a lot of people to make peace with is the fact that, you know, the scamsters are also out there making a plan like we are,
yeah,
doing. We are saying we want a financial plan for financial freedom. The scamsters are also out there saying we want a financial plan,
exactly,
to maximize the amount of money,
yeah,
that we can get from you. So in as much as,
yeah,
we feel we are being diligent around, you know, managing our money, those,
yeah,
that are looking to acquire it by nefarious means are also being very,
exactly,
diligent, being very patient.
Exactly.
I don't know if you've read some of the news reports just around what they're calling the love scam,
yeah,
where, you know, seemingly eligible bachelors seek out,
sure,
you know, lonely women sitting,
sure,
on a pension, huge pension fund somewhere, and over the course,
yeah,
of a year or two, you know, cultivate them to that stage where finally someone wakes up and 3 or 4 million,
yeah,
rands is gone,
yeah,
and you realize the person that you were consorting with is non-existent, or
yeah,
at least not in the way you thought,
yeah,
right? So, and this is after 3 or 4 years, and people can be patient. So,
yeah,
so as you guard your returns as well, you know, you've got to understand that people aren't leaving it to chance that you may by happenstance allow them to take your money. They will deliberately make sure that they give you the comfort you need to part with your hard-earned money. So you need to be on the lookout too.
Eesh, these bloody scammers, eh? And they've got time. They are very, very patient.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
They are not going
for the
anywhere.
Right price, without a doubt.
Exactly. I mean, I look at the number of phishing emails that we get, even from our, I don't want to mention the name, but the other platform where it's free to have an email account, for example.
Yeah.
You find so many phishing scams, and I think this time of the year, it's even worse about some other investment. And they know we want to make money in 2025. We want to improve our financial stance and financial position. So they send these things patiently every single day, and you're like,
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, they've got time, these guys. Okay, I wanna before we go into where do we start, because in my mind I'm thinking sometimes it's good to get a financial advice. Maybe that's where we can start, but you let me know on that one. You mentioned something about risk, understanding your risk appetite. I mean, I remember in my MBA class on finance, and we were talking about how just risk appetite is such an important part of any investment that you make as an investor, for example, right? And in this instance, as a personal investor. So how important then understanding your risk appetite? Are you a risk taker? Are you risk neutral? You know, or what type of a risk person are you? That sounds like it's a very important thing to do.
I think so. And it ties into the discussion around horizons as well.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a longer horizon, you may have a higher appetite to see out the ebbs and flows of investment returns, knowing that ultimately, you know, when you get to the end, you'll be able to see something that's real.
Yeah.
You also then have the possibility of understanding what you have appetite for.
Yes. And
I suppose, you know, we glibly call it risk appetite. There are people that have a very, very strong liver, if you want to call it that. I know they say unesbindi. Some people think that risk sometimes is a function of knowledge. If you know enough about something, you will know whether it's for you or not.
Yeah.
And in many instances where people find a mismatch between the risk that they are actually bearing and what they think that risk is, simply because they do not have knowledge. So you arm yourself with knowledge. I think that's the first step in determining what your risk appetite is.
Yeah.
So uninvesting, you know, I've seen one of the things I've seen now, and this is not to pronounce on whether it's a good investment or not, one of the things I've seen is somebody soliciting funds to build a hotel and, you know, sending you a risk of a rate of return on this, you know, like hotel condominium units, and it looks good and it sounds good, you know. And when you look at something like that, the first thing you want to ask yourself is, so what do you know about hotels and returns, right? Maybe go and find out. You know, the information is widely and freely available now. You want to go out there and look, for instance, and say, so there are hotels, you know, that are running, and some of these hotels are publicly, you know, listed and owned, and they produce financials. And so this guy who's saying you're going to get 15% return a year, how does it compare to other hotel groups that you can find information on? Is this actually possible? Is it attainable? You know, where does he want to build this hotel? You know, is he licensed to be able to be advertising this thing? What's his track record? Is this something that he has done before? So when I start talking risk appetite, I actually just say, that's about knowledge.
Yeah, about knowledge.
You should be able to make the right decision.
Yeah.
And then ultimately decide. Because some people will go into very risky things, but, you know, they tell themselves that they understand them, they've done their homework, and, you know, they believe that, you know, these are the things that they can do.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's interesting there. Can I please call you again? I think the line is the line is deteriorating a little bit there. So let me do this. I'm going to call you again. Please hold for me. Let me try and see if
Hello?
I can. Okay, I think we've lost him there. So I'm going to try and call him again and get him back. But he was mentioning a very important part of risk, which is making sure that you've got knowledge, right? Making sure that you've got knowledge, because it is by understanding that knowledge that things become better. Is it better now?
Hi, Tapelo. Sorry,
yes.
I think I lost you there for a second.
No problem. No problem. We are back. I got everything that you said, and you mentioned a very important part of the fact that knowledge is important, especially when you determine your risk appetite as a person.
Yeah.
Because that's what we normally do, like you said, even when we are appraising someone who's going to want to buy a hotel or maybe want to invest in a hotel or whatever. What's your knowledge about that industry, and just the risk associated with that is an important one. Okay, let's round it off now by asking the question, where do I start? Do I need to get a financial advisor to help me plan for my financial position for 2025? Or I can find a way to educate myself online and just put a plan, because at the end of the day, it's just putting a plan.
So there are a couple of considerations there that you need. I think getting a financial advisor is a great thing to do.
Yeah.
Your financial advisor is only as good as you are willing to firstly be very candid around your finances. And then secondly, also how committed you're going to be to whatever plan you make with the financial advisor. So you could have the best financial advisor in the world, but ultimately your money is your money, and you are going to do what you want with your money. So it doesn't matter getting the right financial advisor who will give you really, really sage advice.
Yeah.
You've got to follow the advice. You know, you've got to commit to the plan. But you've also then got to be very, very candid with yourself when you speak to the financial advisor and tell them what's happening with your finances.
Yes.
You've got to, I think that's where it starts. Right? Anything to do with your finances, especially if you feel that you need a turnaround, you've got to have to be brutally honest with yourself. You can't lie to yourself. And as cliches as it sounds, start with how much am I making?
Yes.
And where is that money going?
Yes.
And then secondly, what are my commitments, right? And am I actually making progress? Because you can mill on a credit card. You know, you can pay the bare minimum every single month, but the way it works is now you've got access to it. So you'll find people carrying a credit card, you know, for 200,000 or 300,000 rand for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
Yo.
And you know, they are not, the bank is not unhappy. They're making their interest. And you know, they are not probably even listed on credit bureau because they pay these monies at the same time every time.
Yeah.
So you've gotta have that brutal conversation. It starts with yourself. I don't think the best financial advisor in the world can help you if you are not honest with them, and also then if you don't commit to the plan that you make. So let's test your resolve, right, with this resolution.
Yeah.
Sit down and make a plan.
Yeah.
This is how much I'm making, and this is where I'm spending it. Let's start there.
Sure. I mean, a credit card of 300,000 rand sounds like a very nice thing, right? Some people have nice life problems in this life. Well,
it sounds like a really good thing, but if you use it, then somebody wants their money back.
That's when the problem starts, eh?
Yes. Somebody wants their money back, and they want it back from you. You're the one that spent it. So.
And you went to Bali with that money.
Yeah,
enjoyed yourself there. Okay, thank you so much, Tish. I think that really sounds amazing and rounds it up quite beautifully there. And any final thoughts from yourself, maybe as we take it home?
Well, for me, the first thing is resolutions are good. They're plans. You've got to start from somewhere. If you are aiming to go nowhere, you will get nowhere. So I think planning to get somewhere or to change something is a really, really good thing. But you've got to understand that you need to be really committed with the plan.
Yeah.
As far as your finances go, you've got to be really, really brutally honest.
Yeah.
Just start with, how much am I making and where is it going?
Yeah.
You know, questions like, is it going to the right place?
Yeah.
Can I spend less here?
Yeah.
You know, should I actually be paying for this or for that?
Yeah.
You know, those questions will be, you know, almost consequential to you sitting down and saying, how much am I making and where is it going? And then you know, then maybe you can start questioning yourself as to whether this is what you should be spending your money on or not. If you want to get a financial advisor, by all means, I think that's not a bad place to start. Some financial advisors, I think, will charge for their time. So you've also got to take that into account. And if you are really underwater, sometimes, you know, the amount of money you need to be able to do that, maybe the money that you need to be able to do something. So there's a lot of information out there that you can access, but you also need to be judicious. You know, there are a lot of snakeskin, snake oil, what do they call them? Snake oil salesmen out there. You know, that will fleece you under the guise of you know, of trying to help you. But it absolutely just starts with an honest conversation with yourself. How much am I making and where am I spending it? And then you can apply your lens to it. You know, is this the right amount that I should be spending on this thing? If I carry on like this, you know, where am I going to end up? What do I actually want to achieve? Where do I want to go? And you know, how am I, how is the way I'm conducting myself right now contributing to my ability or the possibility that I'll actually get to where I want to go?
That's
So
amazing.
that's, yeah, I'd close off on that. The last thing I think would be the Chinese code. Maybe somebody can actually find out from us where that code came from. Like the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, and the next best time is
Is
now.
now.
So the best time to fix your finances maybe was last year, but the next best time is now.
Yes, definitely. That's a beautiful. I'll definitely be checking that code out, but definitely nice quote there. Thank you so much, teacher, and God continue to
Excellent.
bless you. We appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Tapelo, and thank you to your listeners as well. And I wish you all a blessed holiday season,
Indeed.
be safe and good
Indeed.
luck with your money
Thank you so
going
much.
forward. All right,
Definitely.
thanks.
We wish the same to you, my brother. May God bless
Thank
you
you.
as well. Thank you so much,
Cheers.
there. That was a Titch talking to us about making those important money moves. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, and the next best time is definitely now.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.